Welcome to the Brute Strength Podcast, bringing you worldwide experts from all areas of health and fitness. We cover training, nutrition, coaching, and mindset. Welcome your host, strength and conditioning coach, 2012 and 2013 CrossFit Games champ, Michael Cashew. Mind, body, brute.
Hey, and welcome back. My name is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This is episode 6 of 6 in the What is Brute podcast series. I'll catch you up briefly if you either forgot what we talked about in the other episodes or haven't heard any of them. When we first started Brute, I looked around at the coaches in the industry, and what I saw was mainly, if not entirely, just individual coaches trying to be the expert in every single discipline in the sport of fitness. So when we started, we wanted to bring together a group of experts in all of the disciplines that would collaborate with one another to provide our athletes with the best possible programming. So in the first episode, I break that down to you, as well as tell you a little bit more about the Brute ethos, including the fact that we treat mindset as the most important facet of performance. In episode 2, I introduce you to Nick Fowler, the director of strength and conditioning. Episode 3, Matt Bruce with weightlifting. Episode 4, Chris Henshaw with endurance. Episode 5, Nick Sorrell with gymnastics. And today, last but definitely not least, I'm going to introduce you to Dr. Sean Pastuch, who I met in 2014. We were looking for someone to help us with our assessment process. We wanted to make sure that the programs that we were giving people were appropriate and were going to help them reach their goals as fast as possible. And I was introduced to Sean through a mutual friend, and through the process of showing him everything that we do, I realized that he was an expert in a part of strength and conditioning that we were actually weak in, and that is injury prevention, movement quality, and what he calls load capacity. Sean is a chiropractor by trade, and he works some of the big things that he works with athletes on are producing significant and long-term mobility improvements, increasing their capacity for load, and increasing structural balance, which if you're a strength and conditioning coach, that is a sexy word. He's worked with athletes like Rich Froning, Brooke Entz, Sarah Sigmund's daughter, the Wasatch Brutes last year, Brooke Wells, and many, many more CrossFit Games athletes, as well as hundreds or even thousands at this point, average gym goers and average Joes and Janes. At Brute, he and his company audit all of the programming. So they look for imbalances in pushing versus pulling, unilateral versus bilateral movement, as well as a number of other things. He makes sure that our programming is not imbalanced anywhere. He also adds in what he calls performance care segments. So these are low to moderate intensity workout segments, for lack of a better term, that are geared towards high movement quality and strengthening or balancing out our bodies. And he talks about these a little bit in the podcast in a second. And then in general, he just raises our standard of excellence. This guy thinks at a very, very high level, and he pushes everyone around him. So without further ado, Sean Pastuch. Sean, what's up, man? Let's do this.
I'm ready to rock.
So we always say that we train the mind first. In your opinion, what is the most important mental skill or mindset that an athlete can develop?
Yeah, I think that it's extremely important that every athlete be self-aware. And when I say self-aware, I don't mean like know what they're good at and know what they're bad at. I think everyone knows that pretty inherently. It's knowing why you're good at it or knowing why you're bad at it and knowing what steps you need to take to get better at it. And then finally, making the ultimate decision of if you're actually willing to make the sacrifices necessary to get that and to be comfortable with that decision. Because I think a lot of people are like, I want to be a regionals athlete, or I want to be a games athlete. And they know that they're weak in terms of on that scale. You know, they can only clean 300 pounds, which can only, right? But, you know, they're not able to move the kind of weight that a regionals or games athlete needs to be able to move over and over and over again. They know that. You don't have to be self-aware to know that. But what they don't know, because year after year after year, they keep chasing it and not doing the necessary things to make the change, because they're not aware of how much energy that's going to cost them going in, and if they have that energy to spare.
I really, really love that. And it's kind of like a gap between knowing what it takes to get somewhere and your level of commitment, like truly what you are ready to commit to any discipline.
Yeah, I mean, at the last workshop, you used the phrase "turn pro" to someone about something when they asked a question. I loved it. I've been hashtagging the crap out of it. It's like what I've been writing to everybody about everything. And I have this mentorship group, and people are asking me like, "Oh, well, how do I do that?" Though I'm like, "You just need to turn pro, man. Stop pretending that somebody else is going to do it for you.
Yep.
Eliminate all of the things in the way, and let's do it." And there's obviously more to it than that, but you know, you see athletes who year after year after year, you're like, "Oh, if you just had double unders." And like literally people who would be top 10 in their region if they didn't just mess up double unders on, what was it, 18.3 this year? And it's like, you didn't have them last year. How are you a top 10 level athlete in terms of your fitness capacity, but you can't jump over a freaking rope? Like, you knew you couldn't do it and you didn't fix it.
Right. Yeah, people are waiting until they reach a certain level to start acting like that type of athlete, right? They're waiting until they make it to regionals to start training like a regional level athlete and like training like a professional.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And that's a conversation that we have with one of our newer brutes, Emily Tanner, who was a former brute returned. You know, she came out, we were talking here at my house, and she was like, "I can go back to the games again, probably on the team." She was at the games last year on a team. And she's like, "Do I go back to the games? What's better for me to reach my goal of making the games in 2019? Going back on a team this year or trying individually, maybe making regionals and maybe making the games, but maybe not on both accounts?" And I said, I don't think there's any question there. You know, you've never been to regionals as an individual. You need the experience, and maybe you make it this year, maybe you don't, but don't you feel like you would need the experience of knowing how to recover from a bad event at regionals by yourself and or in the open by yourself? She spent some time, thought about it, and decided that she was going to turn pro and move to the gym where her coach, Nick Fowler, coaches. And I think she finished like fourth or fifth in the Southwest in the open this year with workouts that should have dumped her out of the top 20 in the past.
It's badass. So yeah. Here's a doozy for you. What's your general philosophy on injury prevention for athletes in the sport of fitness?
They need to be self-aware, and they'll be able to avoid a lot of the ones that will ail them that they didn't have to have. So to put that really simply, a lot of people think that you can prevent injury, and you can't prevent injury. You know, it's going to happen when you're training for a sport. Mm-hmm. But you can reduce the likelihood of injury by looking at yourself objectively and saying, "Hey, you know what? I don't have great shoulder range of motion. So maybe I shouldn't do a kipping movement on Monday, a jerk movement on Tuesday, an overhead squat on Thursday, you know, 3, 4, 5 days in a row that put your shoulder in a position to be more likely to become symptomatic because you're taxing your end range under load." You make the likelihood of injury less. And you actually make the opportunity for performance higher because you're not going to deal with joint pain when you walk into the gym.
How has your philosophy changed over the past couple of years since you started with Brute and taking into account working with all of the experts on the team that we have? How has it changed in order to kind of fit into the overall design?
Are you talking about my perspective on injury prevention or my perspective on coaching in general?
Both.
So on injury prevention, what I've really learned is that I used to think that we could work with any coach. You know, we were like the substance that you add to the gas tank to give you more miles to the gallon as opposed to the gasoline in the car, right? Like any coach could be the gasoline. We're just going to add more miles to the gallon by dumping this additive in. And we felt like we were the additive. And what I've learned through working with Brute and especially Nick Fowler on a regular basis, and working with hundreds of coaches from all over the world, this, you know, over time, is that it really actually takes a vulnerable coach to work with us, and that we're not well suited to work with every coach in the world. We're well suited to work with really confident, really knowledgeable coaches who aren't afraid that their client is going to leave them when we take some things out of their workouts. And I actually, it's funny because I usually learn from this group and going to my perspective on coaching in general, I usually learn that inclusion is better. You know, it's the more people that you can have filtering a decision to a single person, the better. You know, you don't want to have one athlete answering to seven coaches, but you can have six coaches contributing to one program and then one coach and one athlete relate to each other. Mm-hmm. So I've learned just how specifically good the coaching staff at Brute is, because you can go to Nick Sorrell and be like, hey, muscle ups for this athlete are problematic because of XYZ in their shoulders. And he's like, oh, well, then what if we did this instead? I'm like, yeah, that's perfect. I don't have to come up with the solution. I'm not a gymnastics coach. I don't want to. You know, Nick Fowler can be like, hey, so I get it. I can't do any intensity through Christina Dowley's shoulders until she recovers fully from the surgery. When do you think that will be? I'm like, I don't know. It's all going to be based on her passing these benchmarks. And I can say to him something like, I don't think she's going to be that competitive this year in the Open as far as she could be, but we need to continue to talk to her as if she will, so that she goes through the mental game of getting ready for and experiencing the Open, and then we can make her a savage for 2019, you know, when she's fully healthy and has a full year of training under her belt. And he's like, got it. And we're lockstep. So what I've learned from a coaching perspective from Brute is really the idea that I try to talk less and listen more than I ever did before. I used to be like, the more I'm talking to these people, the more valuable our relationship will be because they can understand what I'm doing better. And since I've been surrounded by these coaches who I'm like, I can't touch Nick Sorrell on gymnastics. I can't touch Chris Hinshaw on endurance. Nick, you know, I'm just nowhere near these guys in their domains. So I try to make sure that at any time in a conversation when I'm teaching something or delivering a value, that I'm receiving a value by intentionally listening to the responses.
So how does your programming fit into the overall design of the Brute program?
So for the group, we put in our performance care segments, which are going to be your forced recovery. You know, the idea that we injure ourselves when our joints go through end range movement under load, usually trying to decelerate, trying to slow down the rate of contraction while a joint is exposed at its end range.
Give a practical example of that, will you?
Yeah, so somebody who is snatching is more likely to hurt themselves receiving the bar or going from the first to second pull when they're accelerating and changing speeds, right? So accelerating or decelerating, it's all about speed change, which is typically when injury is going to occur. And usually that happens because we're accelerating or decelerating to or from an end range position, right? So we receive a snatch in the bottom of a squat. We're trying to slow everything down as we catch it. So our knees are trying to slow down how fast we crash. Our hips are trying to slow down how fast we crash. Our arms are locking out and trying to slow down how fast the barbell is forcing our shoulders down. That's usually when an injury is going to happen. Or it's we are going from a flexed hip position to an extended hip position fast to full hip extension, and our back goes out because we weren't prepared to go to that position and we needed compensation elsewhere. Now, how many times have you seen somebody go to catch a clean and they go to that second pull and then they just drop the bar and they walk off and then like my back is shot? Mm-hmm. So what happens is we find that that's more likely to occur when somebody hasn't already been in the positions that they're going to find themselves in during training. So for example, the single arm high pull, right? We do a lot of single arm high pulls for people. And the idea is get that shoulder to the end range it can possibly experience in something like a clean or a snatch during the third pull and expose them to intensity at that range prior to actually having to find it on a barbell. And when we get people into those positions, their body builds proprioception and durability to injury when they face it in the gym.
The other thing that I really love that you guys did for a long time with Nick was you audited all of the programs, right? You looked for the balance between push, pull, left, right, like all of the mm-hmm. different movements that we're doing, the different patternings.
So,
patterns that we're doing. Go ahead.
Yeah. So that was something that, you know, and we do that for gyms. We do that for individual coaches. We do that for all types of, you know, anybody who wants their programming audited. But we did it with Brute specifically in the beginning because it was like, hey, if we're going to do this with you guys, let's make sure that we're not doing too much of the same thing. And like I said earlier, the coaches on staff are so good and so open-minded that you can be like, hey, we're doing a lot of pulling in the vertical, you know, in a vertical angle from top to bottom, pulling down from a bar. I would love to see us balance that out with some pulling up or with just some pressing down or pressing up, whatever it might be. And it took like 3 or 4 months, I think, and then we didn't really need to do it anymore because now the staff understood like, oh, there's a deliberate balance to this as opposed to just an artistic balance.
Right. So you've got your own company, Active Life RX. You have a family, you've got a wife and two babies. You're an incredibly busy human being. You're also mentoring a lot of people now. Why do you still choose to be a part of Brute?
For the same reason that I enjoy mentoring those coaches and doctors. And that's, I need to keep learning if I'm going to keep being valuable to people. So I like to tell people, you know, it's the cliche expression, you are who you surround yourself with. And we're on a text chain. We're on an email chain. We have phone calls on a regular basis. And you can't show up to a Brute call or to a Brute environment unprepared. You know, you have to know your stuff. You have to be ready to pivot on your stuff. You have to stay at a high level. So if I didn't have that, the only person calling me on myself is going to be myself. So I find value in surrounding myself by people who know a lot more than me about what they know and who are high performers themselves, who force high performance out of me.
What do you think is the biggest or one of the biggest things that you've gained personally from being a part of the Brute team?
Vulnerability, 100%. I didn't even know what the word meant until I came across the Brute team. So what I mean by that is I was always comfortable saying, I don't know. But then I wasn't comfortable telling people about my insecurities, about my weaknesses, about the things that I'm personally working on, both professionally, emotionally, and socially, you know. And I didn't do it because I thought that was weakness. You know, I thought like, oh, well, if these people know this about me, then they know how they can beat me. They know how they can find my problems. And what I learned through being on this team is that it's the opposite. You know, when you put that stuff out there, nobody can use it against you because you've already put it out there. And it also allows you to get the help that you need in places that you maybe didn't expect to receive it because you've made people aware of where you're at. Not to mention the commonality it creates for other people who are like, no shit, he goes through that too? Cool.
Mm-hmm.
So oh, yeah. No question at all. That's the biggest thing I've gotten out of it.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think when when I discovered that myself, when I started practicing being vulnerable, I felt more courageous than I had in my entire life.
Yep.
Which is a something I value more than any other like virtue.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, one of the things I did in the mentorship group that we're on is I talked to the people who are in it and it's professional and personal development. And one of the things that we talked about was, can you think of a situation? We went over some personality stuff and how people want to hear stuff and don't want to hear stuff and how you can figure out if someone is enjoying what you're talking to them about or not. And after it was over, I said, I want all of you guys to think about somebody who you've had a conversation with, who you meant the best thing to, but it didn't come across the way you wanted. Now maybe you've lost a little bit of their trust. It could be your husband, the way you talked to him yesterday. Like, it doesn't have to be a major breakdown, anything. But I want you to think of somebody, and I want you to put yourself in a vulnerable position. I want you to call them or get with them in person, if possible, and I want you to apologize for talking to them the way you talked to them, even though you didn't mean for them to take it the way that they took it. and allow them to just have that you're sorry, you were wrong, you didn't approach them in the way that was going to be valuable to them. Mm-hmm. And every single one of them came back to me and was like, dude, that was awesome.
That's so powerful.
Yeah, it was cool.
Last question for you. What are all of the reasons why someone listening should not join Brute?
Yeah, I like this question. I like it because I feel like anyone who listens to any of these shows or, you know, finds an advertisement, it's like, oh, of course they're going to say they're the best. Of course they're going to say it works. Of course these things. I think that's inherently understood. And I think it's way more exciting when someone says you shouldn't work with us if or because. And I think that if you're somebody who just wants to look good naked and, you know, enjoy day to day, then it's not so much that you shouldn't be on Brute, but you shouldn't be on a compete. You shouldn't be on a games prep. That would be a Brute body kind of client, right? So I think that along those lines, if you're not somebody who wants to be challenged from a mental aspect, if you're not somebody who wants to come in and have a coach ask you, well, why did you do that? Why didn't you do that? And then you say, oh, I don't have time. And then have them say, well, why didn't you have time? You know, and really go down the line and dig into your life. If you don't want a coach to affect you on that kind of a level, you shouldn't do Brute. Because the coaches on this staff aren't going to let you get away with, I didn't have time. Because what they're looking for is, why didn't you prioritize the time? If that makes sense. And the reason why I gave the first example is because I've spoken to people before who've come to me and said, hey, I joined this and this is what I wanted. I told them you're in the wrong group. Get with them and tell them.
Yeah.
But so there's two different answers to that. But I really think that somebody who, if you don't want a coach to dig into your life to try to help to make you a better person, then sign up for someone who's just going to send you a bunch of hard work and do it.
Hell yeah. It really requires somebody to be all in, because the way that we coach and teach and program is for long-term sustainable results. And sometimes that takes, you know, really mastering the mundane things, really doing the boring shit that is not really Instagram worthy and is not very fun sometimes. Well, and many people in the sport of fitness are not used to that, right? They're used to doing five different Metcons every single day, which is super exciting. And that, you know, people love the variety. If that's you, we might not be the right place for you.
Right. If you want to get better at muscle ups by just doing as many as you possibly can in a week, then this is the wrong program for you, because you're going to have to enjoy doing things like false grip strict pull-ups if they're in there, you know, or mastering arch to hollows, just random, seemingly random skill building techniques that it's like, no, you have to have this before you move on. I remember Nick Sorrell at the first retreat was watching me try to handstand walk. He's like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm trying to handstand walk. He's like, well, how many, you know, can you hold a tripod? I said, no. And he's like, how many handstand pushups could you do in a minute? I was like, I don't know, 20, 30. He's like, okay, could you hold a headstand on the ground? I'm like, I don't think so. He's like, let me tell you something. You have no business doing handstand pushups or handstand walking until you can master those basic skills. And he's right. Like, what? Why learn a trick? Yep. Develop a skill.
It's like doing a squat snatch before you can do a proper deadlift.
Yeah.
Word.
100%. Yeah.
Thank you, Sean. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. Your journey towards better fitness continues. Head over to brutestrengthtraining.com to connect with Michael and his guests. Access links and resources mentioned in this episode, as well as bonus content exclusive to podcast listeners. That's brutestrengthtraining.com.